Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fight Nation.
Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio, the only show broadcasting live from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you're listening to the MMA Junkie Radio Show, the only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and as always, is the devious and dastardly Goes, our ace co-host, back east. She's back. She's producing. She's Gabulous. What's up?
What up?
Hi, how you guys.
Doing, doing good. Josh is out sick. Gabby's stepping in. How you doing, Gabby?
I'm doing well, guys. Missed you already.
It's only been a day. But
I know.
All right. Well, we hope Josh feels better, and we will see him soon, hopefully. Now, in the meantime, we got a fun show stacked up for today and lots to cover. Drama. Some drama to cover. And we're going to have to talk about news and drama and things like that, because this week, if you look, there is no UFC, Bellator, PFL. It's pretty blank. Bare Knuckle, however, is stepping up with fights on Saturday and drama. All right.
A whole lot of drama.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a second. But first, let's get some info out there. The number to call in, 877-FIGHT93. 877-344-4893. Tweet us at MMA on SiriusXM. If you want to tweet us personally, I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is at the Goes. The radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio Show. At MMA Junkie Radio. Gabby, what's your Twitter?
My Twitter is GiftOfGabSXM.
At GiftOfGab. And what else?
SXM. Like SiriusXM, but SXM.
Gotcha. All right. There you have it. One more time, the number's 877-FIGHT93. Don't get any easier than that. And then once you save it, it's really 877-344-83. Also, reminder, we're closing in on the end of the Fight Nation 93 era. Soon it'll be Fight Nation 156. If you leave your preset alone, we'll just make the move with you. However, if at some point you become discombobulated or somebody messes with your presets, remember, 156, and that happens on April 4th. So literally 2 days from now, this Thursday, we're Fight Nation 156. Now, what's the drama? And our guest today will be Sadiq Youssef, UFC featherweight, 8:40 p.m. Eastern, 5:40 p.m. Pacific. Casey Kenney, UFC flyweight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. They both got wins at UFC Philadelphia, the event that took place this past Saturday. So now let's get to the drama. This afternoon out in New York, Artem Lobov and Jason Knight had a media day for Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship 5. While they were out there, if you'll recall, Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship has a recent signing by the name of Pauly Malignaggi. So I'm sure you can start connecting the dots. Remember, Pauly Malignaggi, two-time world boxing champion, he has a history with Conor McGregor. If you'll recall, Conor McGregor brought Pauly Malignaggi in as a sparring partner when in the lead-up to the Floyd Mayweather fight. You all know what happened there. After a few days, that thing went south, and those two have not exchanged Christmas cards these past two holidays. Artem Lobov is pretty much Conor McGregor's best friend. And if you'll recall, it was an incident with Khabib Nurmagomedov, the UFC heavyweight champion, and Artem Lobov in Brooklyn, where they had a confrontation kind of in a hallway on fight week that led to Conor McGregor coming over from Ireland with some of his homeboys and attacking that bus. And so things got ugly. Anyway, circling back, Artem Lobov and Pauly Malignaggi had, you know, had words face to face. And this happens quite often, especially in MMA and especially in boxing. And most of the time, someone doesn't strike somebody else. Maybe a push, but even that, people start to get in between, or the fighters just realize we are professionals and we don't do this. However, in the middle of the words getting exchanged and as things got heated, Pauly Malignaggi struck Artem Lobov with what appeared to be a slap.
Yeah. And kind of off of the break, right?
Yeah. I couldn't really tell you if
it
was
looked
off
like
the
they
break
were moving back when he threw it.
Yeah. The security or the people that were there intervened. Artem looked like he got a kickoff. Hard to tell if it landed because I only saw two videos. One that shows clearly them arguing prior to the strikes. And then one where you catch them right as they're striking. And I couldn't tell if the kick landed.
It says he kicked them in the chest, right?
Yeah. That's what he told our Mike Bond. Mike Bond was there to cover the event. And he had an interview. It's up on MMA Junkie if you want to check it out. So, luckily, it didn't escalate. But Pauly Malignaggi had some really, really aggressive words towards Artem Lobov. And frankly, the few times that Pauly Malignaggi has been on our show, two on the phone and one in studio, he strikes me as a fella who comes from the combat sports world, but for the most part has grown out of his youth, if you want to call it immaturity or his aggressive youth or just the way he is. I mean, I'm sure he'll always rock some sort of New York swag to him. You know, you can't just step to him in the streets and give him a shot, you know, shove or a punch or a slap and not expect something. But what I mean is that he just appears somebody that is beyond that. He's now a retired fighter, at least from boxing. He broadcasts for Showtime. So that kind of surprised me a little bit. But you can tell, goes, Pauly Malignaggi is holding on to something from 2 years ago, 18 months ago, with the whole Conor McGregor thing. That's not Conor McGregor. That's Artem Lobov. But Lobov, like I said, is kind of a right-hand man, a best friend, a best mate. So close enough. Same way when Ali Abdelaziz was in our studio, and even though his guy, Khabib, submitted Conor McGregor, and we asked him, and Ali still feels like it ain't over for me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He still harbors some feelings. You can tell Pauly harbors some feelings towards Conor, but he took him out on Artem. Mm. And I'm sure Artem, you know, like, things haven't been squashed between those groups. They're different groups that aren't connected. Pauly's not connected to Khabib, but Khabib is connected to Artem and, you know, vice versa. So I think that some of these will be maybe lifelong. There's other times where, like, for example, Tito and Chuck took a while, but when Tito knocked out Chuck was pretty classy. You know what I mean? Even though Chuck's up 2-1 on him, but he was pretty classy because that was his moment. He got him. There was nothing you could say. But this one looks like they're going to hang on to it for a while, you know, this foursome, but yet they're not all intertwined.
Can I play the part of the casual fan?
Sure.
They're probably dying to know, is this for real? In other words, if they just put them both in a room, are they going to go, hey, man, that shit was crazy, huh?
No.
So because I will say this, when the mic goes off, Pauly's not that much different than when the mic's on. Like, he still kind of is upset about that whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
But how much of this has to do with how much money a Conor McGregor fight would generate versus how much he hates Conor McGregor?
It's interesting because we'll see how New York treats this. I guess it was in their jurisdiction or whatever you want to call it. I don't know if boys will be boys and they'll just leave him alone or if something comes out of it, right? But if you knew that, hey, us two fighting makes no sense when we can save this for 2 months from now, and really go at it and avoid any sort of jail time. I don't know, because I don't know if for them that don't matter and they just maybe want to get at themselves right now. But I would believe that they could control themselves and they would both know the business side of things. You know, fighting in, I think the next bare knuckles in June. And if Artem can get past Jason Knight, remember, he's fighting Jason Knight for crying out loud. And all the headlines is with him versus Paulie Malignaggi. Then that could be pretty lucrative for everybody, bare knuckle and those two.
But you can afford for Artem Lobov to lose that fight and still put together the Paulie fight. Because there's
with Connor?
Heat. No, with Paulie and Artem. There's still heat, no matter what. However, this is what I was thinking about. Do you give Paulie a fight before then? Because if he were to suffer a loss, would that fight be as lucrative?
Okay, so let's go through the scenario. Obviously, if Artem wins, you make him and Paulie.
Right.
And if Artem loses,
I think you can still do it.
You're saying skip Jason Knight versus Paulie.
I think
I would build it. I would say Paulie would have to play the part of you lost. I'm on to a greener pasture. Fight Jason Knight because these bare knuckles. See, it's not like boxing.
But that doesn't get him closer to Connor. That's what he wants. Somehow to make Connor mad enough to want to box him.
To box him, okay.
And the only way he can do that is by fighting Artem.
Right.
I think bare knuckle wins because a lot of people are going to tune in. They want to see the ending of this. Unlike Masvidal and Leon Edwards, they want to see what's going on.
They had an event in Cancun in February. They have this event in Biloxi, Mississippi, coming up here on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And then they have one in June. So what I'm getting at is there's probably one in August or September. I think they could still sort it out where if he wanted to play the card where I'm fighting Jason Knight, but you can put Artem on the same card, and if Artem comes off win that night, then you're back to matching them up, and you can build it up if you want that way.
That's a roll of the dice, though, isn't it?
It is, because I guess if Knight takes out Paulie, then sure, I guess it could be, but then they'd both be coming off a loss.
But it just doesn't have that oomph, right? The oomph comes from Paulie. Mm-hmm. You want to see what a really high-class boxer can do.
You need a good matchmaker for that fight.
If it were me, honestly, I would shelve him until I can get him Artem. Because Artem versus Paulie is attractive whether he won or not.
That's why he's not fighting on this card.
I know, but he could fight on another card before then.
Okay, so what would you do then again?
I would shelve Paulie until I can get Artem to him. Whether Artem's coming off a win or a loss, I don't think it matters. Because it's a beef that needs to be squashed.
Well,
however, if I
depends.
Give Paulie someone, and for some reason that person beats Paulie, the same way Eddie Alvarez lost in one championship, I don't know that fight would have that oomph that it had before.
Okay. Guys coming off a loss can still sell. Not as much, but a little bit of the buzz can be gone. It depends. If David Feldman... what you're applying is the old Zuffa theory, where everything was kind of built around Tito. And when things didn't go right, the company suffered. Now, the UFC doesn't care who wins or loses. I mean, they have their preferred choices.
Yeah.
But they don't really – they know that something good comes out of it. Like, look, Khabib beat Conor. Now Khabib is pretty big. Not as big as Conor, but he's pretty big. And he's pretty big in Russia. And, you know, he's still got that shiny O. He's undefeated. So – his stature grew. I don't know. It depends how Jason Knight wins and how good he looks. And maybe if Paulie comes out and all of a sudden then to go face-to-face and something happens there, who knows? Maybe that becomes a bigger fight. I don't know. Now, bigger than Connor versus Paulie? No. But we still don't even know what's happening there. I mean, Connor could be back pretty soon. You know, like Dana... We'll get to this, but Dana's been discussing how even he doesn't believe that Connor's done, and you know, we have a little bit of audio for that. But I don't know. It depends. It depends how the promoter works. Some promoters that are pretty experienced, they know that they can roll the dice a little bit, and if it happens, it's big, and if it doesn't, it doesn't. And then there's others, you're right, they want to, you know, jump on a particular plot or whatever storyline at that particular moment, then they go for it. They protect it.
And what would you do again?
A long time ago, I would have been the guy that wants to plan things out carefully. Mm-hmm. But what I've noticed is in combat sports, it just seems like with every event, there's new storylines that happen all the time. And therefore, you have to have confidence in the talent, in the matchmaking that you have, the talent that you provide, you know, the platform that you provide, make sure it's marketed right, and then you go from there.
But this is a new organization, right? They don't have the resources that the UFC does, where if one guy falls out, you just grab another superstar.
But they're not the ones that get anything out of Conor and Artem, remember? You're talking about a boxing match.
No, but I'm not even really worried about that. I'm worried about that from Pauly's side, but from Bare Knuckle, you want to set up that Lobov fight with Malignaggi as Malignaggi coming in.
Well, that's
as
what they're
the
trying to do.
Supreme boxer. Yeah, but if you give him somebody before he can get to that fight, you risk him losing.
They're not giving him somebody.
But you could. Time, we don't know what happens, right?
Malignaggi isn't scheduled to fight on Saturday.
I know that.
He's scheduled to fight at the next event. And yes, they're hoping it's Artem versus Malignaggi at this point.
It's got to be that fight, no matter what. Even if he loses. You don't give him night.
Well, we'll see. Well, I'd rather wait till Saturday and have a better opinion. But you're right. I'm not going to argue right now that Lobov Malignaggi is not the better fight of the two. Yes, it is the better fight. Even before what happened today, it was the better fight.
Then you need to find Jason Knight, his Lex Luger, or Luther, because he can chirp. He's good on the mic. He's got that swag. Uh-huh. Now you got to find his guy.
Well, we'll see. I don't know. I think we're scheduled to have David Feldman on later this week, and maybe we'll ask him those types of questions. Now, is he going to reveal his hand? Who knows?
Probably not.
Maybe. But like I say, if he's learned from the promoters before him, I think he'll see that you have a script, and you hope it stays with the script. But for the most part, I think you let the fights just play out. You're right. The UFC's deep, and stuff happens all the time. But I'm telling you, when Masvidal walked out of the win versus Darren Till, he was thinking upward. And that's why you probably got Askren. This thing happened with Leon Edwards, and sure, that could be a big fight, but that's something the UFC is just going to let simmer now. You know,
that's one of those fights where
maybe they can get back to it. But Masvidal wasn't thinking, I want Edwards if I beat Till. He just beat Till. Till just lost to Tyron Woodley, who held the belt before Kamaru Usman beat him. So that's why I think the Askren fight is good for him, you know.
Will the UFC get behind him if he wins?
Masvidal?
Yeah. Like behind him, though?
Finally.
Not just here's your next matchup, enjoy. I mean, like actually push him.
If he waxes Ben Askren?
Yep.
If he knocks him out? Yeah.
Think so?
Yeah.
And at that point, with the day they do that, they're going to go, why didn't we do this way back?
Go back to this. What do you mean by push him, though?
Push him as far as getting him out there, doing interviews, doing stories on him, right? The same way show the Dada stuff from back in the day, how he's grown as a person, as a father, the way they kind of do with, like, Tyron Woodley.
So more than a countdown?
A little bit more, just stuff, you know,
like
to really show.
He
just seems like every time Dana talks about him, like, oh, you know Masvidal, but that's kind of like, I don't know that he's gotten the push that he could have been a guy like Conor McGregor. Mm-hmm. He likes to talk. He's a street guy. Mm-hmm. I would have built off that a long time ago. Hmm. I think at one point they're going to go, oh, man, we had this dude the whole time? We could have been doing these types of fights?
Probably.
Giving him this kind of press?
To be fair, I think Masvidal lost a couple key fights that didn't allow him to be on that type of a streak where they were able to do that at the time, maybe. It's all I can think of. But, yeah. He doesn't need 7 or 8 in a row for you to promote him into a title fight, yeah. For sure. He's got some swag with him, yeah. All right. If you haven't caught it, there's a video there on MMA Junkie if you want to check it out. And it shows how it all went down. It looks like, it just started something from them chirping face-to-face. But did you think when you saw that it could lead to something like that, or did you expect them both to just have words but leave it alone?
I thought it could lead to something.
Yeah?
Yeah. Pauly doesn't seem like a guy that when he puts his foot on the gas, he takes it off. Mm-hmm. He's either going to go straight ahead or he's going to crash. Mm-hmm. But I don't see him taking his foot off the gas. Well, what really cracked me up was Anthony Johnson holding him back with one hand and his phone the other. Dude, that was hilarious.
What is he? Director of Talent Relations or something like that?
Something like that. But doesn't that kind of say, like, hey, I kind of want to keep control, but if I can't, I need to be ready?
Yeah. Well, again, it's all on MMA Junkie. There's a follow-up interview with Mike Bond and Artem Lobov, and there's the video of Pauly Malignaggi and Artem Lobov. I want to say coming to blows, but it looks like really from each guy only got one shot in. And I'd have to – I'm going to look at the – during the commercial, I'm going to look and see at that video and see if Artem got that kick in from that other angle that he was talking about. But it wasn't anything where anybody seriously got hurt. But I guess it could have been ugly, depending on how the camps are, too, how deep you're – you know, if you got a crew with you, you know, you brought your set, then, yeah, it could get really, really ugly. But under the confines of just the media day, I didn't expect anything too bad.
I feel like a nerd, though, because I saw just that little clip got me so invested in watching those two fight. Now I got to see it. Same thing, Leon Edwards and George Masvidal.
I've already
Masvidal.
Been
now
pumped
I
up
see it.
For Lobov versus Knight, for sure. But, yeah, now I know that there's some high stakes awaiting Lobov if they win. And I'm sure David Feldman's like, you know what I mean? Little script was written for him. All right, you're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, Channel 93. We'll be right back, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Khabib and Conor. Khabib's been pretty creative there. Remember, English isn't his first language, so he says stuff in Russian. When it gets translated, it's pretty funny, but he also puts social media to use as well. And it looks like he's been getting some shots in on Conor. Remember, Conor's the reigning king of trash talk. Even when he loses, he still manages to be very, very witty and creative. But it seems like Khabib has had a little bit of getting the better of him. We'll talk about that when we come back.
Fight fans are no stranger to inconvenient changes.
For the first time, we're going to cancel an event.
So we're going to make our upcoming move to Channel 156 on Thursday, April 4th, nice and easy on you. Preset Fight Nation on your dial right now, and we'll remain right where you set us no matter where we go.
It will shock you how much it never happened.
Our season never ends on SiriusXM Fight Nation.
I get paid to say things in this cool voice, and they get paid to be lame. Here are Gorgeous George and Goes.
Tonight at 10:30 Eastern, the top two teams in the West battle when the Denver Nuggets visit the Golden State Warriors on NBA Radio, Sirius 207, XM 86, and streaming on Sirius XM connected devices and speakers. All right, let's talk a little bit about Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov. By the way, Artem is saying, he believes notorious Conor McGregor is going to return to fighting. He believes it. Dana believes it. We all kind of believe it. Makes me feel better about the fact that I think we're going to get a Conor McGregor fight at some point this year. I was hoping for two or three, honestly, because after every event, he's always tweeting and congratulating. Kind of did it to Justin Gaethje this past weekend. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. But the follow-up tweets that come before that or come after that, our people are like, oh, there you go again, trying to, you know, get within the headlines of somebody who won a fight. And so I can see a little bit of people turning on him. I don't think he cares because he's tweeting out to 24 million followers on Instagram and who knows how many million on Twitter. He still gets the message out. And frankly, I guess when you're that rich, you just care about dollar signs. You don't really care about how big is your army of fans. But I've just noticed that everyone's kind of like, I guess that method of promoting is kind of running its course.
Maybe. You know? You can see that.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. So, Khabib and Nurmagomedov traded shots on Twitter. You saw about 2 weeks ago when Conor retired and Khabib put up a very quick post. He says, there can only be one king in the jungle. Only one. With the finger number one. Mm-hmm. The emoji. And then there's a picture of him sitting behind his belt with a really, really shitty grin holding up number one.
He
that
deserves it.
It's got to be pretty, like, damaging. When you see that, if you're a competitive fighter and someone got one on you, goddamn, you don't want to see that one.
Yeah, that is pretty brutal.
Those are my thoughts, you know. Khabib also posted another one. Now, he's got 14.2 million followers on Instagram. He's walking out, high-fiving the crowd, and he's got his belt on, and he writes, great feeling after 5 championship rounds. See you soon, my fans, very soon. And thank you all, guys, for your support all these years. I'm telling you, those little subtle jabs, I'm pretty sure Conor McGregor doesn't like them, doesn't like seeing them, because the universe revolved around him. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? And Khabib gets... He's got a lot of followers, and he's got a lot of commenters, and he's got a lot of respect is another thing. I think Conor McGregor liked being the guy that moved the needle. Here's a Conor shot back to him. You got your money. Wait, he writes. I'm going to read it like how he wrote it. You got your money. And your brother's eye socket shook. And when you fought me, you little rat. Viva Las Vegas, baby. The gaff always wins. Big stomper party in the wind coming soon. At proper whiskey at Win Las Vegas. He wrote that after Habib posted the thing about the five championship rounds or whatever. I think he was reflecting back to Ally Aquinta, that fight.
Whatever that meant, I don't think it was worth it.
Well, you got your money took means the Nevada State Athletic Commission took some of your money. Your brother's eye socket got shook. I think it's Zubaira. One of those guys trains at AKA, and DC told us on the show how he had a black eye for about a week, and all the guys were teasing him. So Connor's the one that gave him that black eye. Remember when they were both riding the fence? That shot that Connor got in, that was it. And that's what he means by your brother's eye socket shook. Calls him a little rat. I don't think he's got a reputation of being a rat. And then he starts turning it towards proper whiskey, and that's fine. If it's just advertising, it's advertising. But I know Connor loves delivering zingers, and that's why when someone delivers it to him, I got to believe it also stings.
I don't know. I still haven't made up my mind on that yet, whether or not it really does bother him. Because at the end of the day, dude, I mean, yeah, you're competitive to a certain amount, though. Like, you're competitive, but you also want to make a lot of money. And I think the end game is making a lot of money. So I think maybe he does see it and go, I'll figure out a way to get this guy one day. But I don't know that it bothers him that much.
He doesn't lose sleep over it.
But that particular zinger,
he doesn't lose sleep over it. But I know it's got to eat him up that he's not a champion right now. I mean, he would be even richer if he was a champion right now, is what I'm getting at. He lives a great life. Don't get me wrong. He's already had a great career, Hall of Fame career. But it all could be better had he won, especially against this guy. This was pretty heated, remember? Mm-hmm. Habib writes back to @NotoriousMMA, says, money comes and goes. The honor that you lost that evening will never return. Live with it. Finish career in MMA, but start career on Twitter? So he's pointing towards the retirement. Mm-hmm. So is that what you do now? You just tweet? Let me find the one. There was a good one. And I'm all discombobulated here because people are tweeting me and texting me. But did you see the one where he called him a wife? Or what did he say? A nag? Or
no.
Hold on.
The one you just read was the last one I read.
No, there was one where he called him. Let's see here.
I mean, I don't know that. I like Habib's zingers back. But both guys kind of say the same things, just different ways.
Habib says, Conor McGregor acting like a jealous wife isn't truly retired.
The thing about Habib's remarks is, to me, they just, I don't feel like they're meant to hurt him or put him down. They're meant to make him want to come back and fight him again.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, the other guy doesn't like seeing that because if one guy's onto your game, and on top of that, he kicked your ass, took your belt months ago, you still don't like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even there's athletes that don't get their asses kicked, and they lose, and they work the whole off season because they want to come back and win. You ever seen, like, for example, the Dodgers, when they've lost in the World Series and the other team's out there celebrating, there's a few that go in the dugout and start the shower process or the interview process, and a few of them will sit there and watch, and you ask them why, and they say because they want every last second to sulk in, so they remember that feeling, and they work hard next year so that they don't have that feeling that they're the team celebrating. I've seen that a lot in baseball mostly because you have that protection. You know, usually in basketball, it's tougher. The athletes are there. They either got to get in or all of a sudden they're going to get swamped pretty good. NFL's pretty good about, you know, doing otherwise, but I've seen it a lot in baseball, and I've heard the players say that. Habib was doing an interview in Russia, and he was at Moscow University, and he said, I don't think he's finished. Conor acts like a jealous wife who says, I will leave all the time, end quote, but then he winds up coming back. So I think it's happened twice, to be exact. Well, no, it's happened once and he came back, and he predicts that this is the second one. Now, Dana White, in an interview with KLAS, TV, when he was asked if he believed Conor McGregor was truly retired, he said, no, I think there's some things that Conor wants, and I think that Conor wants to get together face-to-face, he and I, and we will probably will in the next couple of weeks, and we'll get this thing figured out. So it's coming, which circles back to, why retire, Conor? Like, why do that?
It is kind of silly. I don't think Dana believes it. I mean, definitely the people in the know don't believe it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it just creates headlines. I mean, I think he's aware that everybody's going to jump all over it and take away shine from other people, right?
I compare that to, you remember when, who was it that stole
Felder?
No, hold on. What's the young lady that sings, has a lot of followers, and she's always talking about her ex-boyfriends?
Oh, Taylor Swift?
Taylor Swift, yeah. And then it was Kanye that kind of interrupted, I guess, when she was going to get an award or something mm-hmm. like that and said it should have went to someone else.
Beyonce?
Yeah, you know how a lot of Hollywood looked down on him? Like, God, that was childish. You're a punk. You're immature or whatever.
Well, it was rude, too.
I think, yeah, it was a lot of things. I think a lot of athletes, well, a lot of people in sports, not just our sport, look at these moves that Conor does in the same way. Because he doesn't need to do that. He's Conor McGregor. Like, I heard Josh Barnett talking to Ariel Helwani on the ESPN show and giving him so much credit on some of the moves that he made that helped the sport. And Josh Barnett's old school. He's older. He's old school. He's a guy that really doesn't just talk about how many different people he admires in the sport. He admires himself the most. But, you know, he's like, Fedor's the man. Vandalay's the man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And he was given proper due to a guy that's 12 or 13 years younger, but keeping it real. It was refreshing to hear somebody of an older generation kind of keeping it real. Again, Conor doesn't need to retire. He just needs to sort it out. And he just seems to press the panic button on his approach to the sport. And I don't know. It's kind of silly to me. Like, he's beyond that, man. He needs to remember he's Conor fucking McGregor.
I think the only thing I can think of is maybe he feels like if he does that, some sort of pressure comes on to Dana White by, you know, the type of journalists that you see. And I don't want to make too much fun of ESPN, but just the ones that haven't been around a lot where they read that and go, oh my God, he's retired. Maybe it just feels like that pressure comes on the UFC to have to make a move. The TMZ type reporters or something.
I agree, but I think there's another way to do it rather than retiring. Reminds me of Jones taking down his own, you know, he stopped doing it now, but he used to do it for a while because then at some point he's like, you know what, I'm going to own this and this is my thing. But I think he realized, oh, really, this whole time I've been kind of dumb. And he stopped doing it. And that's what you do when you are 30 years old.
Don't forget, people still grow up.
A millionaire, a father of two, and, you know, to just retire on Twitter. I mean, I don't know. Seems silly to me.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, all right, we got to go to our next break because we got Sadiq Youssef coming up, a UFC fighter who got a win at UFC Philly this past Saturday. We've had him on the show many times, but it's kind of fun now to ride with him in his UFC career. He's 25 years of age, 9-1 overall. The win was over Shaman Marais, now 2-0 in the UFC. So we'll talk to him when we come back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation, Channel 93.
This one's George, and that one's Goes. Now, feel their wrath.
All right, it's time for Super Sadiq Youssef, age 25, 9-1 overall, 2-0 now in the UFC, and again, riding a 4-fight win streak and with a 9-1 overall record. So much fun to see him come out of Titan. Remember Victory Fighting Championship as well? He had a lot of success there, and now he's proven that he can bang with the best. That was a really, really fun fight against Shaman Marais, and we're excited to talk to him. Joining us now on the hotline, Sadiq Youssef. What's up, Super Sadiq? How are you?
How you doing, man? I'm feeling fantastic.
All right. So much fun. Like I said, it's great when we're able to talk to fighters on the regional circuit, and they'll say stuff like, I'm getting better, and I know I'm going to be fighting on some big shows. You watch. You know what I mean? In a way, you're writing those checks. You're writing those checks that the body needs the cash, or your mouth is writing the checks and your body needs the cash or whatever, however the saying goes. And we had to wait a few years, but, man, them checks, they're cashing.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I knew, like I said, I always knew I was going to be here sooner or later, you know. Like, even after I took my first loss, I was like, oh, this is just like a small bump in the road. I knew where my destination was going to be sooner or later. I knew I had the talent and the work ethic to get to the UFC. It's just what I was going to do. And I actually got to.
What did you learn from that loss that you've been able to apply? Because, again, you lost in Titan, but you're undefeated in the UFC.
Yeah, well, honestly, it taught me a lot, you know. Like, during the fight, it's never going to be physical. It's just mostly mental stuff. And from that loss, it just taught me how to stay locked in, you know. I felt like I let my mind wander a little bit. If you ever go back in that fight and you watch it, it's like I was so dominant in the beginning, I started going on, like, cruise control. Instead of being in the moment of the fight, I just started thinking about, all right, let's just keep doing this until this fight is over, you know, instead of actually focusing on my specific task. Like, my coach warned me specifically not to work in the clinch too long because I could get thrown on my head, and that's exactly what happened. That's because I got lackadaisical, you know, I'm not focusing on my job. So now whenever situations comes in a fight, when I feel like my mind is starting to wander a little bit, I just remind myself, stay locked in.
Right. It's funny because a lot of fighters say they grow from the loss, and I feel like a lot of them grow in so many different ways, but I like the fact that you haven't forgotten the loss and you still, mid-fight, can, I guess, not remember the fight specifically, but remember the lesson, you know what I mean?
Yeah, apply definitely. It. I'm definitely not – I make sure to go out of my way to always remember that feeling, you know, because it cost me bad, you know, and it was something that was within my grasp, and I let it slip. And honestly, even before I took that fight, I was supposed to be on the undefeated season of the Ultimate Fighter. That was when they had the 1-point featherweight undefeated. Uh-huh. And I turned down and I took that fight. I was like, I'll just take this one more fight and then go on the show. Instead of just going on the show automatically because they invited me. But, you know, it's a good lesson. You know, it's a good lesson I was able to learn outside the UFC, and I could take it on for the rest of my career.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah, it's funny how life can go in many different directions, and your guys is, you know, you MMA athletes, so much hinges on the win, on the loss, and interesting story you just shared. And we're talking again to Sadiq Youssef, who just got a win at UFC on ESPN2 or UFC Philadelphia, whatever you want to call it. Big ESPN is what I like to call it. That was really, really cool to see you guys on the sports leader. I'm sure that was pretty cool for you as well. I mean, that's everybody was able to catch your fight, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely, man. It's crazy, man. Sometimes I like sit back and I look at it like a little kid from Vegas, man. Okay, especially a kid coming from Vegas over here in PG County, Maryland, and you're fighting on TV and representing. It's pretty cool, you know. I finally got a chance to watch the fight this morning because I kept missing all the replays, but I saw it this morning, and it was pretty cool, man. That ESPN, being on ESPN is a whole different feeling.
It's so easy, you know, to point your family and friends and fans to that channel versus, exactly. You know, some digital platform where you need a username and a password, and your friends only want to go on there for 1 week, and then they cancel because they don't want to get charged on their card. You know what I mean? So
exactly.
Big stage. Yeah. All right. Goes, what do you have for Sadiq Youssef?
So, Sadiq, I want to talk a little bit about the fight because, you know, before you guys got in there, we were doing a broadcast as well, and we were explaining to the audience that we're very familiar with you. We've been following you for a long time. And the way Shaman fought you, I thought was kind of different from what I was expecting, because there were times where he would hold back, he took his foot off the gas, then he would be really, really aggressive, and then it seemed like the fight was going to go in one direction, but then he'd take his foot off the gas again, and then he'd be aggressive again. It was like, for me, as I was watching, it was hard to get a beat on what it was he was trying to do. I'm curious, what was it like for you in there? How long did it take you to figure out what exactly he was trying to do to you?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, because from watching a lot of his film, I had like a specific game plan of how to fight him, because he's usually not that defensive in his fights. You know, like you were saying, like he will attack and then he'll take his foot off the gas, you know, like usually he's like a straightforward attacker too. And whenever he gets defensive, it's only when he's tired, and then he just circles around and runs all the time. But instead, this time he kind of waited on me a little bit, and whenever he would attack, he would make sure he stayed tight. And it was really hard for me to counter him. Like, my whole game plan going in there was to catch him with that sweet counter, the same punch I hit him with in the third round. If you go back and watch the fight, I probably threw that combination like a good 50 times, you know, because most of the time when he opens up wide, especially with his left side, and he attacks straight line forward, and he opens up wide with that left stance. I was trying to counter it with my sweep right, but he just stayed technical, man. I mean, he's been doing it for a long time. I remember he's been fighting pro Muay Thai before I even started training, you know, so he's super talented, especially when it comes into the striking area. But I'm happy I was able to get the win. It was a quality win, you know. He's only lost to Zabit and Marlon Moraes, and now Sadiq Yusuf.
So even after getting the win, we were telling I was telling the audience that even with the win, I felt like people still hadn't seen the best you, because I think you still have some more wrinkles that I've seen in other fights where I'm like, holy crap, this guy can do a lot of damage here. How do you assess your performance? Like, where would you say you looked best, and what were some of the things that you felt like maybe could still get worked on?
Yeah, I think it's a give and take, you know, because it's kind of weird. Because on one hand, I stuck to my game plan, but on the other hand, it's like, man, like did I commit too much to that game plan? Because when I rewatch it, I was like, there are times when I feel like I should have adjusted and just changed to something else, you know. Luckily, the game plan worked, and I was able to come away with the decision. But it's weird, you know. It's like I'm a big critic of myself, but this is one of those situations where you just don't know. Like, I guess I do know because I got the win, so it worked. But like, if I hadn't dropped him in that third round, it's like, would it have been better if I had changed up my game plan? Like, you know, I don't know.
You know, I don't want you to take this as being offensive. I just want to see if you're kind of on the same page. And, George, I guess I got to ask you this too. But
okay.
To me, I've seen both of you guys fight a lot before the UFC. And to me, it seemed like two guys that threw on a Moraes jersey and a Yusuf jersey that night. Because you both fought differently than what I thought you guys were going to do. It was still a good fight, and you both fought well. But you fought way differently than the way I saw it happening in my head. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. Sometimes, though, when you have two guys that are, like, equally skilled like that, we kind of counter each other out. A lot of times, like, when I felt in danger, I was shut down what he was trying to do. And a lot of times when he felt in danger, he was shut down what I was trying to do, you know? Like, it's not sometimes the skill level is just on equal footing, you know, and you're not going to get a dominant win on one side or the other. I'm sure if you match us up with other fighters, man, it might come out a bit different. And if we was a little bit more careless, it might have been a bit different. But it was still entertaining as far as I saw from the audience.
That was great.
People's reaction online. They still liked it. I know we always want a knockout, but sometimes it doesn't happen.
Well, because in Australia, the last win he had was so dominant. I think anybody that thought, oh, wow, this is what this dude's going to do in all of his fights. But what happens is a lot of people are going to realize that Shaymin Moraes is a really, really good fighter.
It's exactly.
Just
going to
take a few fights.
Exactly. People don't realize Shaymin's only lost to two top people.
Yeah, Moraes and Zabit. So they'll point back and go, oh, wait a minute. That's why it was a tough fight, because Moraes is a really, really good fighter. But in the meantime, your stock continues to grow. And I wanted to ask you, tell me about, you know, a lot of the fighters from Africa, Cameroon, Nigeria, that are doing well, and we're hearing that the sport's growing over there. What kind of messages did you get from family, friends, and fans in Africa as far as you getting the W on Saturday?
Man, it's all love, man. Honestly, I think even if I didn't get the W, like my people, they're just happy to see somebody doing something positive, especially they see us doing something positive over states, because you know, most of us immigrants, we have the same kind of similar struggles, man. We all have the same story. So as long as they see me over here doing something positive myself and we're not causing any trouble, we represent the country well, they're always going to show love, man. The deals that the UFC is making over there, like signing with DSTV, I'm hearing rumors about something going on in South Africa. The sport is starting to blow up big, 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 and like, every day I'm seeing more newer people adding me on Instagram and Twitter and stuff from back home in the country. Like, they don't, they might not even know, like, the sport from A to B, you know, but they just, they see a young Nigerian guy shining, so they're going to show love.
Exactly. And so what I wanted to ask you was, from what you're hearing, if the UFC goes to Africa, it'll be South Africa first, or can Nigeria be able to host an event
right now? Right now, we're just hearing rumors, you know, because I'm hearing rumors about South Africa, and then I'm hearing rumors about them trying to go back to Abu Dhabi again. So I really don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, like I say, Sadiq, I'm glad we met you with Victory Fighting Championships, where you were with Ryan Stoddard, got to see you fight through Titan, even the Dana White Contender Series, because it's kind of cool, I guess, to see a blue chipper, you know what I mean? It's almost like we caught you. I'll use March Madness as an example. It's almost like we caught you as a freshman playing for Duke, and now you're playing with the Lakers or something like that, you know? And we're like, oh, I remember him when he was, you know, when he was ruling the college world. So it's been a fun ride for us, too, as well.
Yeah, definitely, man. I feel like I've adjusted very well. It's like some people think, like, a lot of people didn't get to see the comeback. You know, I think the contender fight was everybody's, like, that was when everybody took notice. I remember for the contender, they had me as, like, a 3-1 underdog against the guy I was fighting, you know. And after that, everybody was like, oh, this guy's kind of good.
Very good. Yeah, exactly. Where are you at right now? Is this, like, a victory party or something like that? Or just hanging out with friends?
Yeah. My friends took me out to go eat at Hooters. The food's actually in front of me right now, but you know, okay. I wanted to give you guys my full attention.
Yeah, no. Well, give that food the full attention. Give that food the full attention. I said fool in there accidentally. Sorry. I'm the fool. But please, if you're back in Vegas anytime soon, let us know. We'd love to have you here in studio, all right?
Oh, definitely.
All right, Super Sooty. Congrats on the win. Have fun at Hooters, man. Enjoy all that.
Thank you. Have a nice one, Chief.
All right. Take care. We'll see you. Yeah, he's always been cool.
Mm-hmm.
I really like Sadiq.
He's a nice kid.
Yeah, for sure. I'm telling you, man, the UFC is going to blow up in Africa. I've seen a lot of great athletes in basketball, football, and for sure soccer come out of Africa. And I'm talking about Ghana, Cameroon, Nigeria,
mm-hmm.
South Africa as well. I mean, they do very well in rugby, you know, and one of the best players in the world is from Egypt. So, yeah, that continent, man, I'm telling you, produces some fine athletes. It's just that I think now there's just a little bit more of a spotlight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would expect the UFC, if they're going to go the route of these UFC PIs, maybe one in Nigeria.
Yeah?
Well, that just seems, I mean, I can think of what, there's Adesanya, Usman, Sadiq Youssef. I mean, that's three guys that fly that flag, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I know that Ngannou's from Cameroon. I mean, Nigeria is one of the bigger countries. What I'm not sure of, though, is where the economies are thriving and where this could happen, where, you know what I mean?
Well,
I think you want to go somewhere where a lot of the athletes can do this and you're not, you know, messing up other people's dreams of maybe getting an education or whatever. So somewhere where it could thrive and help out as well, everybody.
I was shooting for somewhere like Morocco, kind of on the outskirts of it,
mm-hmm.
but close enough where even people from England, from Spain, they can get there fairly easily too. It's a quick flight.
Well, I think they'll have their own. I think the UK will have their own. I think Central Europe will have their own. I mean, if you're going to do three in Mexico, like Dana White has said, then I expect these things to start popping up. I thought it was just going to be Vegas, one on the East Coast, and then when they said China, I was like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. They got billions over there.
Mm-hmm.
But then he started saying Puerto Rico. I was like, oh, shit. I see the approach now. First, it was TV deals. Now it seems to be this UFC PI. They're always a few steps ahead of us. All right, that, again, was Sadiq Youssef. Thanks to Brian Butler for lining up that interview. We still got another one coming up, Casey Kenny, who got a win over Ray Borg, again, on the same UFC Philadelphia card. We'll talk to him when we come back. It's the top of the hour break. That means we'll be gone for about 60 to 90 seconds. Chance for you to grab another beer, sit back, relax, enjoy. Oh, and if you're driving, obviously not a beer, but
a Yoo-hoo.
So, yeah, exactly. Just pop a candy in your mouth or whatever and hang in there with us. We'll be right back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93.
Sirius XM Fight Nation, Channel 93.
They're so fat, they gave Dracula diabetes. Here are your hosts, Gorgeous George and Goes.
Chunky Nation, you can do us all a big favor. Follow Sadiq Youssef on Twitter. For one, he's a cool cat, great fighter. At super underscore Sadiq. Sadiq is spelled S-O-D-I-Q, so it's at super underscore Sadiq. Let him know you heard him on the at MMA Junkie radio show with at MMA Junkie George and at the Goes. Give us a little bit of love, too. We'll follow you back as well. I think we will. Do you follow everyone back, Goes, or are you selective?
I am, I guess, a little selective. Like, everybody that follows me, do I follow them right back?
Yeah.
No.
No?
No.
Do you accept all friend requests?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Okay. Except for on Facebook. On Facebook,
that's what I meant.
On Twitter, anything goes. But on Facebook, I'm a little bit more selective.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, okay. I talked about UFC Philadelphia where Sadiq Youssef got a win. Casey Kenney, he got a win as well. He's now 12-1-1. He beat Ray Borg. Remember, Borg moved up to bantamweight. A lot of the flyweights have moved up to bantamweight. Some are still fighting at flyweight, but this was a bantamweight fight. That's why Borg missing weight, although he did give an explanation as to why that happened. But that's why it was a little bit more glaring, because Borg fought for a world title recently. Well, recently enough. When I say recently, I'm usually talking about within a 36-month window, but this was about, a year ago that he fought Demetrius Johnson? 18 months ago?
I think a little bit more.
Okay.
Well,
recent enough that he made 125 there, so that's why it caught me by surprise when they said, there's only one fighter that missed weight. I wouldn't have guessed it was him just because he had an extra 11 pounds to play with, but stuff happens, and it's said and done, and they went out, they fought, and Casey Kenney got the win.
You know how you called yourself a dummy in the last interview? I was a dummy for this interview.
For this one?
Yep.
We haven't even started it yet.
I had to get Casey's number to Gabby, and instead I sent Casey his own number.
All right.
Have you done that one?
Yeah, I'm sure I have. Again, let's talk to Casey Kenney, coming off a big win over Ray Borg at UFC on ESPN2. What's up, CK? How you doing? People call you CK?
Some people, you know. Man, you guys can call me whatever.
All right. Well, I'm going to call you a winner because that was a – that was a huge win in the Ultimate Fighting Championship against a very respected lighter weight fighter. Ray Borg's been doing the business for a few years now, so congrats on that.
Thanks, man. Yeah, dude, he's, super tough. Number 3 ranked flyweight in the world. Only guy to beat him in, you know, probably like 5 fights is Mighty Mouse. You know, he was on a run before he fought Mighty Mouse, so he had a little bit of a layoff, but that's a tough fight to take, especially on 5 days' notice.
Right. And, you know, he feels like he won, and I'm sure you've heard from others that they felt that. But a lot of people have also supported for you as well. So the result is in. The judges scored it your way. But have you had a chance to look at the fight, and what did you think of it? And did you feel like it was pretty close and that the judges were going to give it to you, or what were you thinking when all that was going down?
Yeah, I've definitely watched the fight many times already. And, I think the stats, I doubled his striking. You know, every striking exchange we got, I beat him down. And, you know, the first round, I think I controlled like 4 minutes of it. In the grappling exchange, I took him down, controlled him. I think he had one takedown, but I got immediately back up, you know. To me, it's what you do with a takedown and the control after. And, you know, you can go back and watch. And, you know, he lifted me and sent me down, but I was immediately back up every time and reversed pretty much everything. Even when he took my back for a second, you know, I shook him off every time. And I felt like, I out-grappled him, too, in an overall standpoint, you know, as far as, like, controlling the back, going for a submission, total control. I was even landing the shots in the clinch. You know, I won in the clinch. I won in the striking. So the overall fight, you know, it's not a wrestling match. Even some of those takedowns wouldn't even be considered a takedown in wrestling or jiu-jitsu. You know, I was up so quick, fighting hands, you know, hipping out, trying for underhooks. And the only thing he was doing was trying to hug my legs the entire fight.
Did you have fun out there, or was it stressful in any way, or did you have any jitters as well, octagon jitters?
No, man, I was having a blast. I was feeling it. Actually, John Crouch, in between the second round, I had had him up against the cage, threw a couple knees, and he's like, "You having fun in there yet, kid?" And I looked right at him, and I was like, "Oh, yeah, man, I'm having a blast." So, you know, I was talking to my corner, telling him I was having a blast in the middle of the fight. I think the fight doc was the one that heard it, too. He was like, that was a pretty funny little comment you made there.
Right. Well, you know, I think one thing that helped, honestly, is I've noticed that when fighters take fights last minute, you don't even have time to worry or stress or overthink it. You know what I mean? It's like you just go out there and fight because you basically have to make weight, and then you're probably running around, sorting out, you know, your family, your friends, trying to tell them if you're going, this is where it's at. If not, this is where you can watch it on TV. And next thing you know, it's Saturday and you're fighting.
Yep, exactly. You know, these last two are, you know, the LFA one was short notice too. You know, shoot, man, I really like the experience. You know, I've been staying ready for a long time. And, you know, I asked for everything that, you know, that was in front of me. And I came right after Ray Bourque to start out. You know, he wanted no part of that striking. You know, I landed a couple of punch combo, a bunch of kicks, you know, to start off right at the bat, you know, trying to take his head off. And then as soon as he rushed in, I reversed and took him right down. So like DC said, you know, Casey Kinney's coming out, and he's coming right after Ray Bourque, showing him no respect. You know, I'm here to fight. And that's exactly what I did.
Florida and Georgia have a rivalry in sports. Ohio and Michigan have a rivalry. What about Arizona and New Mexico? Do you guys feel like there's ever a rivalry?
I feel like there's a little bit of rivalry. You know, I feel like the New Mexico Arizona, you know, that little borderline. I guess I'm originally from Indiana, so I know a little bit. I've been out here in Arizona like 6-7 years, so I think they go at it a little bit, but I just think it was the overall, you know, the overall thing. He thought all his takedowns won in the fight, and he was like, man, there's way more to a fight than a double leg.
Did you play basketball, or am I assuming that everyone, incorrectly, that everyone in Indiana plays basketball?
Actually, I mean, I was a wrestler. I started wrestling when I was 8, but I played basketball, too, up until pretty much through middle school. I played, you know, even in 8th grade, and then after that I went full-time, you know, wrestling in high school. So I did
good
it all.
At basketball?
I wasn't bad, man. I was a pretty quick little point guard, you know, lefty. You know, I started on our middle school team, so I wasn't terrible.
Okay, all right. We're talking to Casey Kinney, who's coming off a win over Ray Bourque at UFC Philadelphia. 12-1-1 is his overall record. All right, let me turn it over to Goes. Here Goes. What do you have for Casey Kinney?
Casey, so not a lot of people knew at the time. You know, we found out that Ray didn't make weight, but we didn't really know everything that was behind it until later. At what point were you aware that he wasn't going to make weight, and at what point were you told just everything that was involved in all that? Because it caught everybody else by surprise, the way it went.
I found out right at 11 o'clock when the time was up. He, I think, made his official weight. Like right before, I was like 10:50, and he hadn't weighed in yet. You know, they were still waiting on him. That's when I found out that he was a pound over. I hadn't heard anything other than that, really. Not sure the extent to everything. You know, I read a little article that came out that something that happened to him, but I don't buy it too much. So he's got a lot of excuses.
You know, I think in the article, it said something like he actually made it back to the hotel somewhere around 3 a.m. Had that word gotten to your ears? Like, you know, hey, we just saw Ray Bourque walking into his room at 3 a.m.
Oh, no.
Is that the type of thing?
I had no idea about anything until, like, 11 a.m. weigh-in day, when weigh-ins are over, when we're about to do the face-off. You know, I weighed in, like, 9, or not, probably, like, closer to 10, and then when, you know, started rehydrating, doing the breakfast, doing all that. And, you know, shoot, I was 3 pounds over at 9 a.m. You know, I cut the last 3 pounds, hopped in the tub, boom, did that. And then, you know, weighed in around 10. And I hadn't heard anything till 11. So I had no idea about anything. And I just read this article about 10 minutes ago that, like, what had happened, I guess.
But had you gotten, like, had somebody brought that up, is that the type of information that kind of messes with a fire? Like, had you heard that, would you have still been able to sleep well and everything, or would your mind start racing, like, hey, what's going on with this guy? What's going on with my fight? How would you take that type of news?
No, man, I would have slept well, you know. You know, look at all the stuff I just did. Short notice LFA fight knockout, 5 days notice, you know, to fight Ray Borg. My mind's stone cold, you know. It would have been whatever. I would have rather him just let me sleep, you know. And then I think actually, you know what, I was up at like 4 a.m. because I stay up late and we're 3 hours behind. So it was only like, you know, 3 a.m. is midnight. 4 a.m. was like 1 o'clock. That's my normal bedtime. So I was up like at 4 a.m. around that time. But really, I didn't care. You know, I didn't care what was going on.
Casey, your debut wasn't the typical debut. You were given a very, very tough opponent in a very, very tough situation. So getting a victory here, going forward, if the matchmaker asked you, what should we do? Like, what should we do with you going forward? What would be the plan that you would try and lay out there for them?
You know, I would trust, you know, some of the layout that they'd have for me. I'm sure they got some sort of plan for me. But really, you know, I'd like, you know, a full camp next time. I told him I really kind of want to fight. Maybe International Fight Week would be a good one. You know, I'm a little bit small for bantamweight, but give me a month or so to, you know, pack on a few pounds, get a little bit stronger. And I think I would be exactly where I want to be to make a bantamweight run. But really, you know, you can give me a tough opponent. You can give me a newcomer. Doesn't really bother me. You know, maybe not. I mean, if they want to give me top five bantamweight guy, let's go. You know, I'll strap on the gloves and throw down. But you know, maybe top 15 guy, somewhere around there in the bantamweight division, top 10. You know, warm myself up a little bit before I make that title run.
Have you become, or have you been in the UFC long enough? You know, as a fan and now as a fighter. So have you been around the situation long enough that the whole flyweight, whether they're going or staying, is it frustrating for you?
No, not really, man. I think, you know, everything happens for a reason. And, you know, obviously it might have delayed me getting into the UFC a little bit with them not wanting to sign many flyweights. But, yeah. You know, I think I came in at a perfect time on the perfect momentum in the perfect way. And I think that's, you know, exactly why things happen for a reason. And honestly, I was planning on moving up to bantamweight at some point. You know, I wanted to try to take out the flyweight division, make my run in flyweight, win a belt, and then do exactly what Cejudo's doing and jump up to bantamweight. You know, that's not a cut that I enjoy making anymore. You know, I walk around 150, 155 pounds sometimes. You know, that's a tough cut for me. So. I like where I'm going with in the bantamweight run. You know, it's still a weight cut, but it's very manageable.
Well, it frustrates the hell out of me for you guys, for sure. But right. I'm glad that it's not bothering you. And man, 55 is a pretty good sized bantamweight. So you're
right.
You said earlier in the interview you felt like one of the lighter sized bantamweights. Do you know of bantamweights that walk around much more heavier than that?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess that's more me at my heaviest, you know. I think I was like 47 stepping in the cage, you know, when I'm in shape, just made the weight cut type of thing. But I think if I, you know, walk at it like a solid 55, that's, you know, that's 55 me right now is like me fat boy mode. So like a solid muscular 55 and then, you know, make the 20-pound cut, I think that would be ideal. And, you know, as far as I have the height and, you know, the arm length, I think, you know, like I'm an inch taller and got like a 2-inch reach on like Dillashaw, judging by his stats. Same thing for Garbrandt. I'm a little bit bigger, taller, and longer, you know, just going on by the stats and everything. So, you know, I fit the I can definitely, you know, pack on a few pounds pretty easy. So, you know, I feel like I fit the bantamweight criteria pretty well.
You being in Arizona, do you ever see Henry Cejudo? Have you trained with Henry Cejudo? And do you think he'll beat Marlon Moraes in June?
Oh, man, he's on a heck of a run, but Moraes is he's tough, dude. I'm ready to see that one. That's going to be an epic war. Cejudo kind of trains at different spots than I do in Arizona, but I actually got to train a little bit with Cejudo and, like, the Ultimate Fighter cast up at CSA when they were all out there training in San Francisco area. I think it's, like, Dublin is where CSA is at, actually. And, you know, I got to train with all those guys for, you know, like a week or so.
That's cool. All right. Well, listen, man, congrats again on the win. That was really, really very impressive. We're here in Vegas. So from the gaming standpoint, another thing I got to tell you is I think you were the biggest underdog on the card or one of them. And you won. So I'm sure a lot of people that may have taken a shot on you, you know, the people that play the underdogs, are pretty extremely happy right now.
Yeah, I got like one message on Instagram that some guy who's like, "You won me a shitload of money." He's like, "I'm a fan."
Oh yeah. What's your cut? Did you ask for the cut? DM your PayPal.
Right, like here's my Venmo, dude.
Yeah.
All right. Sure, man. Thank you. You know, it was a great win. You know, I was happy with my performance. You know, it was a battle, man, and you know, I felt like I came out on top. So, against like you know a tough Ray Borg. You know, he shows up to fight all the time, and you know, I wish him the best too.
All right. Well, hopefully we can do this again. Thanks for the time tonight. We really appreciate it, folks. Give Casey Kenny a follow on Twitter at CKMMA135. Have a nice evening, CK. We'll talk to you soon.
For sure, man. Take care. Thanks again. Have a good night.
Okay, we'll see you. All right, later. That dude's cool. Right away, I hit the follow button.
Chill, right?
Yeah. Shout out to Goz for lining that one up. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93. When we come back, we got a daily debate to do. And then also, from the Barbosa camp, they have a little bit of, how do we call it, a complaint, I guess? Not in the aggressive form where I sense an appeal coming, but I think they maybe are appealing to the audience just to see if there might be a reason for a run back. We'll talk about that when we come back.
I'm so excited!
You can now tune in to all of your favorite shows on devices equipped with Amazon Alexa. Just say, "Alexa, listen to SiriusXM Fight Nation."
Okay.
They're so fat, they gave Dracula diabetes. Here are your hosts, Gorgeous George and Goz.
Get the radio channel numbers and a link to listen to your favorite Major League Baseball, NBA, or NHL team sent right to your smart device. Just go to SiriusXM.com/sports today and click Add to My Calendar. If you want to call in, we still got some time before the show ends. 877-FIGHT-93, 877-344-4893. Any topic is on the table. Reminder on April 4th, which is in 2 days, we will be moving to channel 156. If you don't touch your preset at all, the move will just happen. All right, you will be there on Thursday. However, if at some point you lose track or somebody messes with your preset, remember 156. That's where we'll be as of Thursday, April 4th. So 2 days from now. All right. So Edson Barbosa lost to Justin Gaethje, but if you'll notice, when he did subsequent interviews, he had a little bit of redness around his right eye. He never used it as an excuse, but a few of the people from his team, like his manager Alex Davis, good friend of the show, and his coach Anderson Franca, have posted some pictures and have given some comments. All right, now if you go to, I guess it's Anderson Franca on Instagram, or just easier, go to MMA Junkie. It's one of the top stories there. Shout out to Fernanda Pratis for that story. You can see kind of what they're talking about. And it looks like in one of those exchanges, remember the fight was really quick. They were all over the place. Gaethje did poke him. It doesn't look intentional to me because I've seen it in the video form at slow speed and high speed. But it happened. So it doesn't also look from their camp as if they're saying, man, we would have won if it wasn't for that. They're not saying that. They're not saying Gagey's a dirty bastard. They're not saying that at all. If anything, they congratulated him, gave him and his team a lot of respect for the fight. They're just wondering if the fight could have perhaps been different. And I do remember during the fight, Edson kind of swiping at it. But if the referee doesn't catch it, then I'm under the assumption that it could have just been a knuckle.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? But he was doing that. And remember, their calves can't be feeling good, both of them. They hit each other pretty good. They rocked each other pretty good. Body shots, everything. It was quick, man. It was a pretty violent fight. But I understand their point. So normally I think we go, hey, man, we just move on. If we revisit it down the line, okay, great. But remember, this is the division with Khabib Nurmagomedov at the top, who does not want to fight till November when his teammates are clear. And they're all clear of the UFC 226 post-fight scuffle that took place. Because Khabib could fight in the summer, but he does not want to fight until his guys are off the hook. Dana White saying maybe September. Tony Ferguson is dealing with some personal issues. Conor McGregor's technically retired. So this division is just on hold. We got a featherweight fighting a featherweight champion fighting a lightweight for the UFC interim title. Gagey, he doesn't seem too impressed with Felder. Like, he doesn't want to fight him. And then he's kind of fought a few of the others already. A few others are booked. Kevin Lee's dipping his toe in the welterweight. Amazingly enough, if they were to tell me we're doing it again, I'd be in.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
hard to not be
in, wouldn't sit there and champion the cause. Like, if they said, we're picketing outside, do you want to hold up one of the signs? I'd say, nah, I'm not going to join you in that. But if they told me, hit refresh on Junkie right now, and I hit it, and it says they're running it back, I'd go, cool, I'd be happy. Because that was fun. That was a fun fight.
It was a fun fight. I mean, but for somebody to think
the finger thing happened and the ref didn't catch it and it didn't look intentional, so I think we all move on, but that's just how I feel about how exciting both fighters are. That's my point.
I think it's silly for anybody that thinks it was intentional. I mean, if you're backing a guy up against the cage like that, you're not thinking, okay, here's my opportunity to poke his eye and then throw a punch. Like, you're just trying to hit him, all right? It kind of happened, but I don't know that it's so hard to argue because you see his eye. And anybody that's ever been poked in the eye knows that that kind of sucks, and it takes a while to get over. But after that, he didn't really show signs of somebody that couldn't see or was having problems or anything like that. He did take, like, kind of a quick swipe, but sometimes fighters do that to see if they're bleeding or something, right? Like, it just didn't have that feel of, this is something that's affecting me right now at the moment. Now, it's hard to argue with a guy if they said it did because you see his eye and you saw the poke.
You compare it to a soccer game, and somewhere in the middle of the field, you wanted to pass it to your buddy, and it happened to go off the referee's leg, and you just go, oh, man. But yet it didn't impact the game in any way. Like, a goal wasn't scored off a counterattack off that little mishap. It just maybe the ball went in another direction, the other team got it, and then you stole it back, and then, boom, you're right back to your attack.
Something
minor?
An advantage play not going your way, like something like that,
right.
You know?
Versus had it been like two or three of those, it would be the equivalent of somebody that was going to make a tackle, let's say, in pro football, and they ran into the umpire in the middle of the field, causing the other team to score and thereby lose the game. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, they said it. We read it. And it was interesting. And like I said, both guys are exciting. I sure hope they run it back at some point. That fight ended too quick for me. But yet, I'm not in any way complaining. That's for damn sure. All right, with that said, let's do our daily debate.
The brothers Garcia seemingly can't agree on anything.
Everybody knows it's duck season.
Rabbit season.
Duck season.
Rabbit season.
Whether it's food.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Less filling.
Tastes great.
Gambling.
Always bet on black.
I like red.
Black.
Red.
Black.
Red.
Black, dummy.
Or even social media.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
Instagram.
Snapchat.
The same applies to the biggest stories in MMA. Time for MMA Junkie Radio's Daily Debate.
Today's hashtag daily debate question for at MMA Junkie Radio with hashtag BKFC5, which is for Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships 5, taking place Saturday on a non-major MMA weekend. Remember, no UFC, no Bellator, no PFL. And their main event featuring recognizable MMA names. Remember, headliner, Jason Knight, Hick Diaz they call him, versus Artem Lobov, the Roos Hammer, Conor McGregor's best friend. They're fighting in bare knuckle. That's going to be awesome. And the chaos from today's media event. There's a big spotlight on BKFC because of what happened between Paulie Malignaggi and Artem Lobov, which could lead to a future fight. The question is, will you be watching? Two choices. Yeah, I need the violence. Nah, I'll wait on some MMA. Goes?
I think I'm going to go have a picnic in the park, lay out a blanket, make some sandwiches, hang out, and be a dork, because that's what I would be being if I did that. Of course I need the violence. And you're going to set it up that way with those two guys that never stop coming forward? Are you kidding me? I got to see that, dude. I got to see that. And I know that there's going to be some, almost like a playoff, you know, well, actually, either guy could really fight, but Paulie Malignaggi coming in there and adding that spark to everything, it was perfect timing. I got to watch it.
So even the casual fan that didn't want to watch it because they're all about the MMA, they had that little spark of what happened in New York has to be maybe guiding them that way.
Yeah.
Not just because we've been promoting it. You know, we're fans of Bare Knuckle. We've caught a few of their of events. A lot of MMA fighters that we've cheered for have migrated over.
It was brilliant because it took people that were on the edge, should I order it, that are already MMA fans, combat sports fans, it took them over, and then it took in the casual fan that just said,
what about Kevin from Chicago? He wants wrestling, though. He likes a little bit of wrestling.
Picnic? Is that it? What's he going to do? What else are you going to do? If you're a combat sports fan, what else are you going to do?
Yeah. How would you compare it in terms of when there's an MMA fight where it's just striking and then boxing, which we obviously know is just punching, but how would you describe to someone that's like, just, man, I don't know if I can watch Bare Knuckle. I need some jiu-jitsu. I need a hip toss from judo. I need some wrestling.
You got to sit down and you got to watch a couple of them before you realize that there's almost this new strategy that needs to get built in within it. And it's kind of funny because it's so early that they're finding that out, I think, on the go as well, the fighters. I think some of them are starting to learn that a lot of people just think Bare Knuckle, they're going to headhunt. But a lot of it is going to the body and wearing people down. Mm-hmm. And I think the fighters are learning that on the spot.
Conditioning, defense.
Mm-hmm. Knowing when to throw that punch and when not, when it's not worth it. Because
your hands
are bare, dude.
Exactly. Yeah. I think everybody thought early on that it was just a step back and barbaric. But I think it's actually really fun and interesting. And you're seeing some of the strategies now start to play out with a lot of these athletes. Look, Chris Lieben's involved. Chris Lytle's involved. Beck Rawlings, Artem and Jason Knight, they're involved. Paulie Malignaggi's giving this a shot. You know what I mean? So there's some names there, and they've been doing good with the matchmaking. Sometimes it's been just two MMA guys, former MMA guys, going at it. Sometimes it's been two bare knuckle guys going at it. Females throwing down. So, yeah, this one's a tough one. It's tough. If you're an MMA person and you're going to wait on MMA, then you're going to miss out, in my opinion.
I mean, what's the worst that can happen? It's a fight.
And there's a lot of them.
Yeah, what do you want?
Yeah. All right. Well, we tried. Neither one of us was really, really going to be on the side of waiting for MMA because we'll be watching Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship 5 on Saturday. All right. Thank you to all of you that voted. It was pretty close, but more people sided with wanting their violence. 59%. Mm-hmm. 41% said, nah, I'll wait for some MMA. All right. There you have it. There's today's Daily Debate brought to you by the MMA Junkie Radio team. All right. It's time for our next break. Listening to MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93. Stay close. We will be right back. We're going to circle back to Demetrius Johnson and the outstanding performance he had over at ONE Championship this past Saturday.
Fight fans are no stranger to inconvenient changes.
We have learned that Becky Lynch will not be able to compete at Survivor Series.
So, we're going to make our upcoming move to Channel 156 on Thursday, April 4th, nice and easy on you. Preset Fight Nation on your dial right now, and we'll remain right where you set us no matter where we go.
It will shock you how much it never happened.
Our season never ends on SiriusXM Fight Nation.
Injuries forced them to retire undefeated from MMA with a record of 0-0-0.
They are Gorgeous George and Goes. And this is MMA Junkie Radio.
All right, Goes. We talked a little bit about Eddie Alvarez and the loss he took at Bellator. Sorry, ONE Championship 92. We talked about Bibiana Fernandez getting his title back. We talked about Angela Lee experiencing her first loss. We talked about Shinya Aoki getting the lightweight belt.
Mm-hmm.
We did mention that Demetrius Johnson got his win, but I guess we didn't really spend too much time on it. He got a submission win, and remember, he's part of a Grand Prix as well in the flyweight division. I guess maybe because he just makes it look so easy, and we wouldn't expect anything less, but I think we kind of felt that way about Eddie Alvarez as well. Big favorite, heading to Japan to do work. Let us know when the semis is. Let us know when the finals are, and let us know when eventually these two cats fight for a world title.
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking, Demetrius just kind of did what he does, right? I mean, he comes in there, he never seems overwhelmed, underprepared in a fight. Seems so comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Eddie Alvarez was just shocking, and I think I showed you the picture of his eye, right? Now it kind of makes sense a little bit. Because when he got caught and he just kind of covered up, it really did seem like something really, really was hurting him. But that eyelid looks horrible. That's one of the worst eye injuries I've ever seen in MMA. He cut it on the top and the bottom.
Right. It was. It did look pretty ugly. But I'll tell you, Demetrius had like this takedown. He passed aside, worked some knees in. He was trying to Kimura, and then later on, obviously, he finished it with the guillotine choke. But, I mean, he went for an armbar. What he seems to do is he's seamless from one martial arts slash sport to the other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And he takes
chances.
So
wrestling to jiu-jitsu, and if he has to strike, he'll kick, he'll punch. He feints. I mean, he's strategic. He's just playing high-speed human chess. And he is a special fighter, honestly. Like, I don't know that there's too many people that can do what he can do like that.
But
and not like in any way have like bad moments, you know what I mean?
All this worked out for him. He looked great. But was it the right decision?
To go to ONE Championship?
Yeah.
He
could be rematching Henry Cejudo right now, right?
Right. Well, maybe what he got, maybe the intel he got was that flyweights are gone. Like, that was it right there. Because remember, this happened last year. And we didn't know yet that TJ was going to fight Cejudo. Like, I believe he left before that fight was even made, if I'm not mistaken. So it could be that he just said, well, while they sort that out, I'm going to go chase down some money, grab myself another title, and maybe circle back and fight Cejudo or maybe I don't. I mean, what he did was pretty amazing. 11 title defenses.
Yeah.
And flyweight champion for such a long time.
Successful at bantamweight, too.
What would really, really be the answer to all this is if we knew how much he made at each organization. If it's way more over there, then he made the right choice.
Well, I don't think he would have
left. Pretty close,
I
don't know.
Right?
I feel like he was a little bit bitter in leaving the UFC.
I feel like it, too.
And so even if he sacrificed some money, he just wanted to be happy.
Yeah, and just kind of none of the media bullshit, all that stuff, having to go to different places, right? He just kind of went down there, did his thing, boom. Theatrics at the end, his kicks, his fireballs, calls it a day, right? Goes home.
Right, yeah.
I mean, he loves being a dad. I think that's what he just comes home and he wants
and
to
play
do.
Games. He does very well with the Twitch, and I think he just has maybe other interests or other highs.
He's actually fun to watch.
When he celebrates after a kick, it doesn't seem as primal as other guys. Other guys are like a Mike Perry looks like he's just foaming at the mouth, like he just killed a lion or something like that.
I think because he's so
good at
it.
Demetrius is just like, woohoo, I won, but now I don't have to worry about MMA for another 3 to 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when can I start playing games? When can I be with my kids? When can I be with my family? But he doesn't seem, like I said, as primal in his wins. It was competition to him. It's nothing personal. He won. Exit the octagon and on to the next one.
But did he seem underprepared to you against Henry Cejudo? I just felt like Henry Cejudo looked
that
great.
Thing was a split decision, right?
Yeah.
Henry Cejudo fought a perfect fight. That fight could have went Demetrius Johnson's way. I remember it was close. I think I scored it for Cejudo, if I'm being honest. But
I think I scored it for DJ.
I don't think it was out of line on either side because it was close. Mm-hmm. But I really didn't think it would be the end. I thought, if anything, he had just found a rival that he could go back to and fight. Remember, he's 1-1. He's not 0-1 to Cejudo. He's 1-1 with Cejudo. Maybe a trilogy, and if you lose, go to 1. But I guess maybe the stock drops.
But there's got to answer. There's got to be an answer to somebody that's reigned for that long to get something taken away. I mean, isn't it human nature to just want it back? That was so odd to me. Whatever it is one it gave him or what must have been great. Or he could be bitter or he could just be over it. I don't know. But to me, it was just odd that he didn't want that right back.
It could be that feeling like you won that night was good enough for him.
That's a good point.
Whether two of the three judges call it the other way, he just feels what he feels. And that's that. And plus it helps that he had that one win already over Cejudo. Remember, Cejudo needed a split decision to beat Mighty Mouse. Mighty Mouse took care of Henry Cejudo pretty easy in the first fight, so maybe he can rest a little bit. In fact, you've said that yourself many times, where on one end, when the fighters are 1-1, it's the fighter that got the finish that can maybe feel like that's maybe the tiebreaker and can give you that wink across the room, kind of like, we're 1-1, but I got you in that first fight with the finish.
But if you play that game and you're Henry Cejudo, don't you go, yeah, dog, but we all know you got me pretty early. I was still young when I did that. You got the real Henry Cejudo in this fight.
I suppose. Well, then the other one can go, well, you got me on the way out. Took you forever to get good enough.
True.
I don't know. But those guys,
took you forever to get
I know that. I know that Johnson doesn't even play that game at all.
Nah, he doesn't like that stuff.
You know what I mean? All right. On yesterday's show, we talked about free agency and some of the moves that had took place over the years where fighters left the promotion where they had been for a long time, had a certain measure of success, and then eventually they entered a free agency period, were courted by different organizations, went and signed a lucrative contract, but guess what? It didn't go well. Goes myself and Dan Tom, even though Dan's not here, he submitted his pick. We will, when we come back, we're going to give you our picks of some of the biggest disappointing moves for big-name free agents. We're not going to rank them or anything, but we're just going to go over some of the ones that we've all seen in the past few years and see if there's one that we might have forgotten that leaves us with the reaction of, I forgot that one. Nice one. Mm-hmm. So stay close. We'll be right back. It's MMA Junkie Radio on Fight Nation Channel 93.
Champions, Hall of Famers, legends. The very best coverage of the fight game is right here on SiriusXM, Fight Nation, Channel 93.
They were kicked off the set of The Fast and the Furious for being too loud and too good-looking. Once again, here's Gorgeous George and Goes.
All right, just a little bit of quick news as we start to cruise to the finish line. Ruslan Magomedov is the first fighter to receive a lifetime USADA ban. He's a UFC heavyweight, 3-0 in the UFC, 14-1 overall. Kind of a kickboxing type guy out of Dagestan, Russia. And I remember when he got suspended the first time, and I thought, bummer, because I was actually impressed with his skills. He had gotten a win over Chase Sherman, I believe was one of them, and he was going to face Marcos Rogério de Lima, but I guess they said he had pulled out because of some visa issues, but it turns out there may have been a positive test that may have been the reason. So that was last October. That would have been number two. And then as they were sorting that out, remember, just because you're kind of like on a freeze and they're sorting it out so they can give you your actual punishment, you're still supposed to be open to be tested. And I guess when they came out to test him again, he refused. And a refusal is like a strike, and that made his third strike. And USADA announced that Ruslan Magomedov has received a lifetime sanction.
But look at the history.
After second and third violations of the UFC anti-doping policy. So that's it, man. He is gone. 32 years of age. He's just done with the UFC. He can still fight other parts of the world where they don't have testing.
Yeah, but, I mean, that couldn't have caught him by surprise. How do you not know that if you refuse in that fashion, I'm sure at some point somebody goes, you know, I'm pretty sure you're going to get banned if any price at all. Who cares?
I guess, yeah. Turning it couldn't have been lost in translation either, because you have plenty of time when they show up where you can call a manager, you can call a translator, and go, hold on a second, let's sort this out. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I think he just knew and maybe just didn't want to go through the process of maybe embarrassment or who knows what. But also, former UFC heavyweight champion Josh Barnett has signed with Bellator. I think we were all kind of expecting that.
Yeah.
He has a history with working with Scott Coker.
Scott seems to like those fighters.
Yeah, exactly. Scott has a soft spot for old school. You know, some of the old school fighters that helped build the sport that still have a little gas left in the tank. So I'm sure we'll see him soon. Now, can he become a world champion? I don't know. Can he beat Ryan Bader? I mean, Ryan Bader, he did use his hands a lot to win that title, but there was also fights where he was using his wrestling. And Josh Barnett's a big dude, you know, so I think Josh Barnett would have a
He knows that he uses a decent size, chance. Too.
Exactly, yeah. PFL released, sorry, let me use this proper name, announced, because they didn't release anybody. They announced more fights, more fighters that are going to be upcoming in this season, too, including Jeremy Kennedy, Damon Jackson, Hannes Torres, George Gonzalez, Rashid Yusupov, Francimar Barroso. He returns for a second season. Satoshi Ishii has been signed, guys.
Nice.
So I believe they're getting pretty close. Remember, the first wave was the returners, the champions, and then some of the key guys and gals that are returning. And so they're pretty close. We'll have to bring in maybe Ray Sefo to talk a little bit, as now all 72 fighters, I think, are pretty close to being all 72 spots are close to being filled up there for PFL. They're kicking off in May, so we're about 6 weeks away from that, because I think it's sometime in mid-May when that's going to take place. Also, Ricardo Lamas, he is going to be fighting in Chicago. He's from Chicago, and he's going to be fighting in Chicago. We just heard that he got the fight booking versus Calvin Kattar. That's a good fight. I like that fight for both guys. UFC 238 in Chicago has Ricardo Lamas versus Calvin Kattar. Anthony Rocco Martin is looking to return to UFC on ESPN4 in Minneapolis. I think that's June 29th. I think that's that card right there. No opponent has been named as of yet. That's just a card that he would like to fight at. The same way Desmond Green, who just got his first finish in the UFC this past weekend, he wants to fight at the Rochester card in late May. Bellator had some announcements here. Paul Daly versus Eric Silva. James Gallagher versus Jeremiah Labiano for Bellator in London. Leonardo Santos returns after a 32-month layoff, and he meets Stevie Ray at UFC on ESPN Plus 10. Where the hell is that card? I can't keep track.
The
title's alone. Oh, no, it's June. And that's in – where the fuck's that card at? Well, that one's got – oh, it's in Sweden. Gustafsson versus Smith. Queen Latifah has – Volkan Ozdemir, Jimmy Manuel versus Alexander Rakic. Well, that's a nice little 1-2-3 punch there in the light heavyweight division. Makwan Americani versus Chris Fishgold. Nick Hein versus Luigi Vendramini. Stevie Ray versus Leandro Santos. Now, that's not taking place till June. But I wanted to catch up a little bit on this kind of stuff, because a lot of these fight bookings are of interest to people. All right, goes. The homework assignment, name a – I mean, we know – we discussed some. We discussed some free agent signings that didn't go well. There was Roger Huerta when he came over from the UFC. I think he left like 5-1 or 6-1 from the UFC, came over to Bellator. Remember, we all had to watch it on a stream, and I think Bellator was based in Chicago at the time, and Bjorn Rebney had him there. They made the announcement, and I think he won his first fight, but then after that, just started losing. Didn't work out too well. That was one. We discussed yesterday Krokop coming over from Pride, beating Eddie Sanchez, but then getting KTFO'd by Gabriel Gonzaga. And, of course, he never really reached that status that he had at Pride, where arguably he was either number two or number three. In the UFC, kind of had a 500 record. It was actually 5-6. So, solid. I mean, you know, he could headline some cards, and they used him out in Europe, but for the most part, it didn't pan out.
Yeah.
So, there's a couple, but I felt like there might be a couple where we would all just go, oh, yeah, I forgot about that one. Because we're not really going to pull one out of our hats that we just flat out don't remember. But I think there's just going to be a couple where upon looking at it further, we'd go, yo, yeah, that was a disappointment as well. So we'll start off with Dan's. He submitted to yours to his. Dan joins us on Mondays and Fridays now, so he's not here. But what was his?
All right, so Dan is going to go with Hector Lombard.
Okay.
Gets to the UFC, his debut. And, yeah, didn't work out for him too well.
3-8, I believe, was his overall record in the UFC. He came over as a Bellator champion. He had a long winning streak, and we just figured that, you know, he had a judo-based – he came from the world of judo, and he had,
heavy hands.
Heavy hands. He was an intimidating type of stocky guy, and then he was coming in at 170, and we thought, okay, a lot of that might transfer over.
So I'm over at Pride a little bit too.
Right, exactly. I guess things started off okay, even though he lost his debut to Tim Boach. He came back and won 3 of the next 4 at one point, so he had a 3-2 record. But then he had that no contest versus Josh Berkman, and then he finished off with 5 losses, and it just, I wouldn't say he wasn't competitive, but there was a few there where he just wasn't the Lombard that we all had remembered.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how about you, Ghost?
All right, I'm going to take you all the way back to UFC 17.
Oh, wow. Oh, I know where you're going. Can I just guess it?
Yeah.
Randy Couture went to Japan and got upset by Anson anyway?
No.
Oh, what?
That wouldn't have worked in our
world. Well, I don't know. I just went immediately back to like the late 90s.
No. You're around the same era, right? But a young man by the name of Hugo Duarte was brought to the UFC. Why was he brought there? Because he had that history
with
Hickson Gracie.
A fight
on the beach.
Lost.
Well, yeah, I guess. A fight on the beach.
All right.
Up until then, we hadn't really heard too much of Lucha Libre, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like introducing a new art form in there.
Correct.
Somebody from the Gracie past, I think they really wanted to sell that, and then maybe they can get another Gracie to come back and fight him. I think that's the
plus
plan.
Plus, it was the Henzo, Eugenio Tadao. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a rivalry between BJJ.
Maybe they can somehow get Hickson to come into the UFC, and he got starched by David Tank Abbott.
He sure did. Yeah. It reminds me, I remember in the jiu-jitsu world, when jiu-jitsu was ruling everything.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look it up here, because I can't remember who we lost to, but I remember hearing so much about a guy named Roberto Traven.
Oh, okay.
Who was an all-star in the world of jiu-jitsu. And if you looked at him, you thought, oh, wow, just in looking at him, like, he was well put together, and if he's got any form of striking, I mean, that's like a Hoist Gracie 2.0. And then he came in, and Frank Mir got him right away. Submitted him, too.
Yeah.
And I remember watching the fight, and it was pretty lackluster. That was back in 2001. But the one I was going to say is one we all know, Takanari Gomi.
Okay.
I just thought the world of him over in Pride. And, man, he went through he looked like goes like everything that had been in Japan had been a big lie. Because he came over, and he was always, like, in poor shape. He was just kind of terrible on the ground. Towards the end, he started to get a little bit better, but God, he had an awful run, and not only was he losing, he was getting finished by everybody. So I'm talking about the overall package of Takanari Gomi. I was expecting so much. I thought he was one of the Japanese fighters that could really be it, and he disappointed me.
See, that one, you're right, but I thought that the loss to Nick Diaz in Pride kind of showed us that, okay, some of these UFC guys do have something for this kid, too. Mm-hmm. I thought I exploited him a little bit.
Okay, here's a quick one. I know we got 1 minute left. Remember Sokaju? He beat Arona, and he beat Antonio Nogueira.
Yeah.
And then he came over to the UFC, and I think he went 1-2. But he came over with a little bit of that hype just because this was one of the Pride superstars that was just starting to make his mark, and we all thought he was going to do something. In fact, Nakamura, remember he came over as well?
Yeah.
I think he went like 0-2 or 1-2, and both of those guys, I thought they were going to do a lot better, and they didn't. So we can have a little bit more fun with that tomorrow. We got to get out of here for today. We want to thank our guests, Casey Kenny and Sadiq Youssef. Also, hope Josh feels better. Shout out to Gabby for holding it down. And we will see you in about 22 hours with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. So, for Goz and Gabby, I'm George. Have a nice evening. Go out there. Don't just take up space on this planet. Be something special, man. Push yourself to the limit. Be a champion.
SiriusXM Fight Nation, Channel 93.